The ideal tank destroyer, that looks nothing like a Stug.
See, I did warn Dennis, if he doesn't fucking start turning up, we're going to officially change the stance on the Micro Machines podcast position on Stugs. Might also manage to get Don out on here if we do that. If we start calling the Stug a good tank, it might just force him to actually participate once in a fucking while.
Oh, fuck, I'll do it anyway. The Stug is the best tank destroyer ever created.
Only by stats, by looks, no.
Oh, what are you talking about? That's sexy as hell.
It looks really good.
Did you guys see that photo I posted of the cursed Stug with the rotating turret?
Oh god, yes.
Yes, yeah, that was...
I saw that, and I was just like, this is just so wrong. Oh, this is... Yeah, that was fucking weird.
My boy, what have you done with my boy?
So is the driver like a paraplegic then? He has no legs?
Probably. Either that or somehow, no. You'd have to move the driver to like back a bit. I don't know.
Congratulations, Lieutenant Dan.
You're now in the German army.
The Stug MBT, all inclusive. Right. So we're talking about a tank destroyer, are we?
We are. We're talking about the M18 Hellcat today.
Well, I guess we better start the podcast then, hadn't we?
I think we should.
Shall I do the honors?
Go for it, buddy.
Well then, everyone, you are listening to the Micro Machines podcast. This week, we are talking about the M18 Hellcat, not the F6 Hellcat, Clint.
I know, I was very disappointed about that. for like 2 weeks, it's like, yes, the Hellcat! Oh, the M18.
Yeah, at this point,
sorry, I'm not an aircraft boy.
Yeah, we're just at this point having fun as well, just giving you a nice big set of blue balls on that one. Yeah. At some point, you're going to burst.
It won't be this episode.
It's alright, I'll create my own Hellcat episode with blackjack and hookers.
Do it. Please.
But before we get started on the M18 Hellcat, I think we should do a couple of introductions. So first off, you've got me, Callum, from New Zealand, feeling pretty damn good about things considering yesterday's result, which I'll be talking about later on. And I have just finished one hella strong coffee, so I'm kind of perked up right now. Yeah, next. Don't all talk at once.
It's you. Oh, it's me. You got me, Clint, out of Indiana, and I have a nice cold Pepsi.
He's back with the Pepsi.
I got the Pepsi.
Well, you got me, Garrison, out here in Kansas, drinking a nice fresh pot of coffee, and I'll be taking you guys through the M18 Hellcat today.
So I take it you want the next slide, then?
Oh, yes, sir. Please do indeed. Yes.
I did say one thing about this little photo in the front. Is it just me, or is it weird to see a 30 cal on a Pintle on something like a Hellcat where you usually see the 50?
It's definitely weird.
It's weird. Like, come on, dude. Have some self-respect.
And then bros over there with a grease gun, too.
Hey, I have mad respect for that guy. I mean, he's like, I got a tank, but I'm going to use this.
The one in the back's got a 50 on it, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, is that a Hellcat? Yeah.
I can't tell if it's a Hellcat or not.
It kind of looks like he's got a cupola.
It does, doesn't he? Probably.
Yeah. Look at the.
This is weird, but
it is weird. Okay.
Anyway, moving on.
All right, so
I'm just getting lost in the sauce right there.
Oh, dude, it'd be like that. Just for everyone that everyone is aware, my references came from the worldwide internet and then a book called American Tanks and Armored Fighting Vehicles of World War II by Michael Green. So we're going to start off in the development section. When the Tank Destroyer Force was organized in 1941, their commander, Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Davis Bruce, envisioned the units being equipped with something faster than a tank, with a better gun, but less armor to allow for speed. A cruiser rather than a battleship. He objected to the 3-inch M10 gun motor carriage because it was too heavy and slow for his needs, and later on to the 90mm M36 gun motor carriage because it was essentially an M10 with a bigger gun.
Wait, so he rejected the 3-inch, did he?
He did, yep.
I wonder if I heard that before.
R.I.P. my boy Callum. The United States Ordnance Department made several failed attempts to provide such a vehicle using the weapons and technology available, including mounting a 3-inch gun on the fast M3 tank chassis. The M18 was the end product of a long line of researched vehicles aimed at providing the desired machine. Now, there on the right, you can see the 3-inch gun on the M3 light tank chassis, which I think just looks goofy as shit.
That thing slaps. That thing's fucking awesome.
That's like some HIDF shit.
It's so cool. It kind of looks like rounding the corner in like a German tank, just seeing that.
Kind of looks like the Germans like Nashound thing.
A little bit. Or something, yeah.
All right, development part two. In December of 1941, RIP my boys at Pearl Harbor, the Ordnance Department issued a requirement for the design of a fast tank destroyer using a Christie suspension, a Wright Continental R-975 radial aircraft engine, and a 37mm gun on the chassis of a light airborne tank, T-9, as the 37mm gun motor carriage T-42. In April of 1942, the Army requested that the 37mm gun be replaced with a 57mm and a coil spring suspension be substituted for the Christie suspension as the 75mm gun motor carriage T-49 and authorized the construction of two pilot models. The Tank Destroyer Force concluded that the same 75mm gun, M3, as used on the M4 Sherman medium tank would be better for a tank destroyer.
Which eventually they'd go to the 76, wouldn't they?
Yes, yeah.
Those two tanks would cost as fuck.
Right.
It's like, it's a Sherman, you can identify it as a Sherman, but it's not quite a Sherman.
Yep.
Now, are these plywood mock-ups, or are they real?
No, these are the actual, like, real, some of the only photos of the actual prototypes they made.
You know what I hate about all the prototypes they made? They got rid of them. They got rid of all of them. You're sitting there like, just, please just keep them, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, come on, just for a historical thing, just keep them so we can see things.
Yeah, park them in a shed somewhere for a while.
Yeah.
People love this shit in like 30, 40 years.
Yeah, it's like, right. You know how much this shit would be worth after the war?
Would have been great. All right, development part three. The second pilot T-49 was built with the 75mm gun in an open-top turret as the 75mm gun motor carriage T-67 and was delivered in November of 1942. After testing, it was revealed that a more powerful engine was necessary. The 76mm gun M1A1 being developed for the M4 Sherman had also impressed the Tank Destroyer Force. The T-67 project was closed in January 1943, and the Ordnance Department directed that six pilot models of the 76mm gun motor carriage T-70 be built with torsion bar suspensions, more powerful engines, new turrets, and minor changes to the hull front. What became the M18 originated in Harley Earl's design studio, part of the Buick Motor Division of General Motors. Previously, basic designs for other kinds of vehicles had mostly originated from within the Ordnance Department. I'll go back real quick, just 1 second.
Yep, go for it.
Sorry, I was catching my breath. That first picture there kind of looks like a T-34-85.
I was about to say it looks very Russian.
Very, very Russian.
It looks kind of like, you know when we did the Pershing episode?
Yep, yep.
And you had those early sort of like trying to convert things into a heavy tank. Kind of looks like those.
It does, yeah. Left all right, I believe this is... Oh, good. I think this is the last development slide.
Go for it.
The first pilot was delivered in April 1943, and all six were completed by July. Once developed, the Hellcat was tested in the same manner as passenger cars before and after it at the General Motors Milford Proving Ground. Although the Hellcat was relatively mature when it came to the automotive performance, problems had to be rectified and included issues with the engine and new automatic transmission, weak front shock absorbers, and the position of the gun to provide more working space for the gunner. The first models of the tank destroyer were tested by the U.S. Army's 704th Tank Destroyer Battalion. The unit had originally been trained on the M3 gun motor carriage, a 75mm gun installed on the bed of an M3 half-track. Despite its T-70 prototypes requiring several improvements, the 704 had come to praise the vehicle, and the unit was later issued production Hellcats after many of their suggestions were integrated into the vehicle. The testing phase of the Hellcat proved that teamwork was an essential element of the new light tank destroyer units and replaced the fixed, rigid structure of other units such with a much more flexible command structure that allowed adapting to more complicated tasks. Small unit leadership, gentlemen.
I'm surprised that this had an automatic transmission.
You know, with the M3 tank destroyers, the gun motor carriage,
mm-hmm.
you know the 75mm on them?
Mm-hmm.
You know how old, you know when those guns were made? Those are, mm-hmm. I think they're like French-designed 1890-something or 1880-something guns. They're
Jesus,
like,
fuck.
They're from like the 1800s, late 1800s.
Damn.
Yeah, like... I was watching a Chieftain episode on it, and it's got, like, you know, when you actually look at it, like, looking at the breech and how it opens, closes, how it all works, you suddenly it's like, holy fuck, these guns were really old, but, I mean, they still worked really well. Like, they could still knock out, like, most German armor.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Let's have a look, hang on. M3, what are they called? GMCs. I hate the American way of fucking naming shit.
Yeah, it's kind of.
Oh, you're
gay.
Not the only one.
Like, yeah,
it's the M1.
Yeah, it's the M1897 75mm. So it's from 1897 they were made.
Jesus Christ! That's
I mean, though, if they could still knock out a fucking Panzer IV at a decent distance, I mean, shit.
If it works, it works, I guess, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they were saying, I was reading a book one time that some of the troops, Marines on Grattle Canal, they still was issued trapdoor Springfields.
Yes. Yes.
And again, it is the Marines who were so backwards, they thought the M1903 or 07's the rifle?
1903.
Yeah, they thought that was better than the M1 Garand.
I mean, in a way, it means same cartridge, but ammo consumption would be better.
You implying the Marines can't aim? I mean, we know Garrison
they can take their time to aim.
Yeah, a lot of situations you don't really have the luxury of just sighting into your target to engage because you're taking fire too. So just fucking dumping 8 rounds into the general direction is probably better than just one and re-ragging.
All right, next slide.
All right, talk about design. This was a really cool feature, I thought, about the Hellcat compared to like the Sherman. The M18's new design incorporated several innovative labor-saving maintenance features. Drivetrain maintenance was performed by removing a large access panel on the front of the hull. Disconnecting the drivetrain from the driveshaft, attaching extension rails to the drivetrain mounting, and then sliding the entire assembly out of the hull on rails. For access to the bottom of the engine without having to remove it completely from the hull, it was possible to slide the engine out onto a rail system integrated with the rear hull access door. The 900T
Torqmatic.
Yeah, Torqmatic transmission had three forward gears with ranges of up to 16 miles an hour, 12 to 34 miles an hour, and 30 to 60 miles an hour, and one reverse gear with a cruising speed of 20 miles an hour. The engine speed was governed such that the vehicle normally could not exceed 55 miles an hour in third gear.
They should have fucking... Don't govern it. Let's see how fast that bitch could get.
Right.
you know 70 miles an hour in an M18.
Our M18s in World War II have a faster reverse speed than Russian modern armor.
Sounds about right. I will say, could you imagine being a maintenance guy working on like everything else and like, you know, having to get through a hatch and all of that, and then suddenly you get this rollout where it literally just slides out and you have 360 access? You'd be sitting there like, I have seen heaven.
I thought that was such a cool feature. I mean, just look at that thing. It's just sitting there just waiting to be fixed. It's just happy as can be.
It's a prelude to modern armor.
The new M10, the Bookers, they mm-hmm. do that. They have the whole powertrain slide out.
Hell yeah.
So does the Abrams. You just slide the entire power pack right out.
Does it?
Yep. It slide right out, and you can they go to the fucking depot, slide one engine out, put another engine in, and be off again.
Yeah, they can do that within like an hour, right?
I've only seen it done once, but it was probably a couple of hours.
Hell yeah. Alright, design part 2. The M18 carried a 5-man crew consisting of a commander, gunner, loader, driver, and assistant driver. The driver and assistant driver were seated in the front, left, and right of the hull. Uniquely, the driver and assistant driver were provided the identical sets of controls, and either could be used to operate the vehicle, but only the driver's set of steering levers could be used as parking brakes. The commander, gunner, and loader were positioned in the turret, the commander at the left rear, gunner at the left front, and the loader on the right. The turret crew were all provided with seats, and the commander could stand on his seat to operate the 50 caliber M2 Browning machine gun on a flexible ring mount on the left rear of the turret. An SCR 610, goddamn, try saying that 10 times fast, radio was placed in the rear of the turret, and an escape hatch was also provided in the hull floor directly underneath the turret. And top picture is the from the A driver's seat looking to the driver, and then top down on the bottom is obviously the turret.
It's kind of suck being the assistant driver. It's like, usually you have a hull mounted machine gun where you could have a bit of fun with. That one, you're just sitting there twiddling your thumbs.
I mean, at 55 miles an hour, it's like he's got to be there, you know, like a rally driver. You know, hard left, hard left.
Hey, I would watch that rally. An M18 rally race? Fuck yes, I'm down.
Hell yeah.
Honestly, dude, if knowing what we know now, going back in time, if I had to be an A driver for anything, it would definitely be a fucking Hellcat. Because, I mean, just think about it. If you're on the road, you're like, okay, we got a 3-hour trip to make. The first hour, fucking, I'll drive, and you can sleep. You don't have to man a gun. You don't do anything. You can just sleep. And then the next hour, we'll switch. It's just like, holy fuck, that's way better than, you know, having to man a gun the entire time, like on a fucking Sherman or something. Because you have to stay awake.
I love how an open-topped vehicle has an escape hatch.
Right.
I mean, it's like you can either try and squeeze through or just fucking jump out the top and risk it. Like, I think that would honestly be the quicker thing, wouldn't it? Just get over the top.
I mean, you know, if like a building fell down on top of you and you know you
can't
get
through
the
rubble. Yeah, that's true.
I have a feeling like if a building fell on top of you in an open-top turret, the debris would crush you before you managed to get to the escape hatch.
Possibly. Had to be a reason for it to begin with.
They'd probably bitch they didn't have one, so they probably just threw one in.
But it's like you look at the actual escape hatches and tanks, and you sit there wondering, it's like how the fuck do you get in there? Like, the only way you can get through that hatch is when you are in absolute desperation. Because yep. It's like, I've seen some of them, and it's like, my shoulders wouldn't even fit through that. And it's in the,
yeah,
like,
they're fucking tiny.
Well, you look at some of them, and they're underneath torsion bars, and you're like, how the fuck do you get to that? Or something like that, you know? It's...
You also have to remember, it's like back in the 40s, it's like the average height for a man was, you know, garrison height.
Whoop, whoop.
5 foot, fuck all.
Yeah.
5 foot seven, good sir, 5 foot seven.
Yeah, fuck all.
Oh, God. All right, anyways, on to the armament, gentlemen.
I only say armament. This because if he tried to hit me, he wouldn't be able to reach.
The bigger they are, the harder they fall. The bigger they are, the harder they fall.
I'll let you stand on the stairs.
I'm going to jump on your back like a fucking gremlin.
Well, you know, if he pisses you off, you just pick him up and put him on the counter.
You're a fucking dick. Do me like I do my son. Just set him on the counter like, stop. Take a breath. It's like, damn it. Alright, armament, gentlemen.
Ooh, the fun stuff.
In contrast, now this is going to be a tongue twister for me. In contrast to the M10 and M36 tank destroyers, which use the heavy chassis of the M4 Sherman, the M18 Hellcat was designed from the start to be a fast tank destroyer. As a result, it was smaller, lighter, more comfortable, and significantly faster while carrying the same gun as the Sherman 76 models. The turret could rotate through 360 degrees in 24 seconds using an electro-hydraulic traverse mechanism, and the 76 gun could depress 10 degrees and elevate 20 degrees. The maximum firing rate was 20 rounds per minute. The breech block of the gun was tilted 45 degrees to the right to aid the driver, or aid the gunner, sorry, in manipulating and inserting ammunition in the confined space of the turret. 45 rounds of main gun ammunition were carried, 9 in the turret to the right of the gun, and 18 in each sponson. A 50 caliber M2 Browning machine gun with 800 rounds of ammunition was mounted on the left rear of the turret in a flexible ring mount. Each crew member was provided with an M1 carbine with 90 rounds for self-defense, and 6 Mark II grenades, 6 M50 White Phosphor smoke grenades, and 6 smoke pots were also carried in the vehicle.
Oh, so they didn't give him the grease gun.
Negative.
Huh. I think I'd prefer a grease gun to a carbine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Because if you're going to be fighting, if you got to use your fucking, your primary, you're in some hot shit.
If you're at the point where you can't use the gun, you can't use the fucking 50 cal, yeah. I think you're kind of fucked at that point anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so question for you guys. So it's got the 76. With or without the muzzle brake? What are you guys for?
With.
With.
I'm glad we all agree on something for once.
It just looks cooler.
Oh, yeah. Does the Tamiya kit? That one doesn't come with the muzzle brake, does it?
It does not.
Ugh. Why?
Actually, give me a second. The box art shows it without, but it wouldn't surprise me if they included it. Let me check.
I mean, they should do. I mean, it came with both.
Let's see. Check the instructions real quick. Building the gun. There's so many steps to this. No, it does not. According to the instructions, it does not. Which is a surprise, honestly.
Well, that sucks. It looks so much better with the muzzle brake.
It does. Yeah. And there's so many great reference photos of Hellcats with the muzzle brakes in, like, Bastogne or Italy or, like, Germany in late war. And they all have muzzle brakes.
Yeah, you don't actually see a lot of historical photos of M18s without the muzzle brake.
So, question, they only carry 9 rounds in the turret.
Yes. Yeah, that's their ready rec.
So, it's like after, if you're in a firefight and you shot off 9 rounds, you had to dismount and unload from the sponsons?
No. No. The way that it has it, you got 9, where is it? 9 to the right of the gun? 9 in the
yep.
9 in the turret to the right of the gun. And then behind, you got the sponsons are internal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you know how you see the M18, you got 2 sponsons and they're in the back of the turret. So you got those ones there, and then the rest, that's what, 18, that's 36 plus 9, that's 40, that's all of them. Yeah, that's 45 right there.
Okay.
So it sounds like none of them are actually carried in the hull at all. They seem to all be in the turret, which means if you get shot in the turret, you are fucked. They take one shot to the rear of the turret. That whole thing is going off like a Russian tank.
I mean, honestly, as lightly armored as this thing is, I mean, you get hit anywhere, you're fucked.
That's the biggest downside to this thing. But fast maneuverable, you know. Definitely a big play in the lack of armor.
It is the definition of a glass cannon shoot and scoot.
Yes. All right. armament part 2. One disadvantage of the M18 was the inconsistent performance of its 76 gun against a thick and steeply sloped frontal armor of later German designs, such as the Tiger and Panther. The problem of the main gun performance was somewhat remedied with high-velocity armor-piercing HVAP ammunition beginning in fall of 1944, which allowed the 76 gun to achieve greater armor penetration, but this was never available in large quantities. The 76 gun was standard... With standard ammunition, could penetrate the frontal turret of armor of a Panther tank only at very close ranges, whereas HVAP ammunition gave it a possibility of effectively engaging some of the heavier German tanks and theoretically penetrating the front of a Panther turret at ranges of about 1,000 meters, which is about 1,100 yards.
Yeah.
So never reportedly achieved in combat, but theoretically it could?
I think so. This part I got out of the book. And later on we'll go into some combat stories of the Hellcat, but they're close quarter stuff.
Yeah, a lot of their stuff, they didn't do a lot of sort of sniping, did they? It was more like up close and personal.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta think about it. They, at this point in time, you know, Krauts are on the defense, we're on the offense, so... We're rolling up on their defenses a lot of the time, and that, you know, you're engaging.
You have to close the distance pretty fast.
Oh yeah, you know,
pretty much instead of used as a tank destroyer, they was trying to use it as a mainline battle tank.
No, I mean, it was still used as a tank destroyer, but like in the Battle of the Ardennes and whatnot, they did a lot of good defense work. In late or mid 44, they did a lot of like probing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean you got the turret can depress 10 degrees, right? You get and then there's not a lot of, you know, not a lot above the actual gun mantlet. You get a Hellcat in a hull down position with its 10 degrees, that would be a bitch to shoot at because there's like hell you can aim at.
That would be a bitch to shoot at.
Plus, with the open top, they can in a Hellcat you can see and acquire a German tank faster than the Germans could.
Oh, 100%.
So
that was a big advantage that the crews loved, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah. So another quick question for you guys: what's got thicker armor, a Tiger or a Panther?
Tiger.
Which Tiger?
One.
Yeah, true.
I mean,
okay, Tiger One versus Panther would be Tiger, I think.
Yeah.
Well, because the Tiger 1's got 102 millimeters, but it's not sloped, whereas the Panther has got sloped armor, so...
You really can't go off of the sloped armor, Only being because even the Tiger ones, early Tiger ones, well, even mids, and possibly even some lates, the quality of the armor plate was better than what was on the Panther tank.
That is true. Then again, it's all fucking circumstantial. I mean, you got to be there at the time, don't you? We can all sit here in armchairs going, oh, well, you know, this value and this value, but in reality, that fucking, you know.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. Like, you hear stories of, like, sales. Listening to, well, I was watching about a Vietnam War where it was SEALs being overrun. It was like the few times the EM, there was tank battles in the Vietnam War, and it was a base being overrun with by VC with PT-76s.
Oh yeah,
those are the Soviet amphib ones.
Yep.
Yeah, you know how they have 5/8 of fuck all armor.
Yep.
You know, like 20 millimeters or something like that. There's a story of like one of the SEALs firing an M-72 lore at it, and it literally just hit the plate. Which theoretically it should have been able to go through, and it literally didn't even detonate. It just ricocheted straight up in the air, and you just watched the rocket just go firing itself straight up from it. Which
that's because the laws were faulty.
Yeah, that is wrong.
Yep. It's funny you say that, because in ITB we had there were segments where veterans would come out and talk to us, and we got to talk to one of the guys who were at that battle. I think it was the same guy because he talked about the tanks and how his law sucked. Well, that's funny. I haven't heard that story since ITV. That's funny.
Yeah, because I think that was either a documentary that was on YouTube or I can't remember. It was really good though. It was like tank battles in Vietnam, which they were like, I don't know, 5.
Yeah, that's like, kind of like when I bought my AR-15 or I built it. My dad was like, why are you wanting a piece of shit like that? It's like, Dad, they're a lot better than the ones you had in Vietnam.
It's like, they're different. Yeah. They're a bit better.
It's like, when he first went in, he was issued an M14, but then his second tour, he got an M16, and he hated it.
Oh, I bet.
Which did he prefer, the 14 or the 16? Because the M14 is supposed to be a really shit rifle, isn't it?
No, the 14 is good. M14. It's just heavy as fuck.
Pretty much, so the M14 is a...
So it's good as long as you're not a bitch.
Yes.
Pretty much, yeah.
Anyway,
the heavy and the recoil is heavy.
The M14 is just an M1 Garand that's, you know, with a mag instead of the... Fuck, what is it? The clip? The...
Box mag?
Bandolier?
Yeah, the bandolier.
Anyway, what are you saying about the M16 and his experience?
Oh, it just when I bought my AR or built my AR, he's like that. It's like that's such a shitty rifle. It's like, why would you want one? It's like, believe me, it's like they're a lot better than the ones that you had when you was in Vietnam. Which after he shot it a few times, he agreed that it was better.
Yeah, I think if I had the option, I'd probably go 14 just for the fact it's 7.62. You know,
yeah,
7.62 crew all the way.
Love our 7.62. Alright. So this is the actual, this is armor part one. This was the slide I meant that I'm gonna have trouble reading. Fucking armor thickness, I swear. The armor of the M18 Hellcat was quite light to facilitate its high speed and only provided protection from small arms fire. The lower hull armor was 12.7 millimeters, which is half an inch thick all around, vertical on all sides. The hull floor was only 4.8 millimeters, which is 0.19 inches thick. The upper front hull also had an angled construction to form the Hellcat's sloping glacis. Two plates were angled at 38 and 64 degrees. Oh, fuck, I just canceled the fucking... There we go. 38 and 64 degrees from the vertically. This upper hull armor was also 12.7 millimeters or half an inch thick, being angled at 23 degrees from the vertical on the sides and 13 degrees from the vertical at the rear. The hull roof was 7.9 millimeters or 3.31 inches thick. The cast turret of the Hellcat was 25.4 millimeters, which is 1 inch thick, on the front at a 23 degree angle from the vertical and 12.7 millimeters or half an inch thick on the sides, also at a 23 degree angle from the vertical and rear angled at 9 degrees from the vertical. The front of the turret was further protected by a rounded cast gun mantlet, which was 19 millimeters thick, also 3/4 of an inch thick.
And
there you have it, to the next one.
There you have it, folks. That is what it sounds like when someone actively is having an aneurysm.
Yeah, no kidding. Fuck, dude, I was like, I had to edit that so much from fucking Wikipedia, dude. Like, this entire slideshow took me about 2.5 hours, and that slide alone took me about 40 minutes. I'm not kidding. Okay, oh, so armor part all the two. Oh. Yeah, I figured you guys would get a hard on for that.
If I ever get myself a Hellcat, that's what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah. Well, armor part two. Another disadvantage of the M18 was its very light armor protection and open top turret. In testing of the T-70 for possible use as a light tank, 9 out of 30 armor piercing 30 caliber bullets penetrated the side of the turret at a range of 75 yards. Oof. Yeah.
Bitty yeah,
that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. Now imagine a 42 lighting up that son of a bitch. There'd be nothing left. The open top turret, a characteristic which it shared with all American tank destroyers, left the crew exposed to snipers, grenades, and shell fragments. However, it gave the crew excellent visibility, which was of importance in the killing of tanks, the intent of tank destroyers being primarily ambush weapons. The doctrinal priority of high speed at the cost of armor protection thus led to a relatively unbalanced yet effective design.
There's only one bad thing about that photo.
What's up?
Where the fuck is the muzzle brake?
Right.
Yeah.
However, if I ever get the Tamiya kit, that's yep, what I'll try and do. That foliage is really, really cool.
Hey, you got yourself a 3D printer. You get the Tamiya kit, you can just 3D print the muzzle brake.
Dude, I'm struggling to 3D print depth charges for the Mariner at the moment.
You got this.
The tails won't print. So, I'll be hitting up you, Clint, after this on how to rectify that. Because
I'll try my best to help.
Yeah, I'll give you a rectify.
Go ahead and send me the files, that way I can look on how to orient them.
Will do.
Alright, gents. Tactical mobility. While the M18 was capable of high road speeds, this attribute was difficult to use successfully in combat. Although sustained travel at high speeds was hardly ever used outside of the Allied response during the Battle of the Bulge, most Hellcat crews found the higher speeds especially useful in a sprint to flank German tanks, which had relatively slow turret traverse speeds, and such maneuvering allowed the tank destroyer crew to direct a shot into the enemy's thinner side or rear armor. The open top provided an advantage in terms of allowing the tank destroyer crew significantly better visibility than their opponents, many of which were German tank destroyers that did not have revolving turrets and were handicapped by poor lateral visibility. In general, Hellcat crews were complimentary of their vehicle's performance and capabilities, did complain that the open top created a cold interior in Northern Europe winter of 44 and 45. This problem was exacerbated, right? this problem was exacerbated because the air-cooled engine pulled some of its cooling air through the crew compartment, creating, in effect, a large armor-plated refrigerator. It proved impossible to seal off the crew compartment entirely from engine-induced drafts, which would have sucked.
So even if you throw a tarp over that thing to try and warm up, you're still getting blasted.
You're cooked. You're cooked.
That's sad.
Let me rephrase that. You're frozen.
Yeah. Yes. You know, quite the opposite, really.
Yeah. All right, a little bit more about armor. Original plans called for a total of 8,986 M18s to be supplied, 1,600 for lend-lease to other countries, and 7,386 for the U.S. Army. The production plans of the M18 were curtailed to 2,507 vehicles, including the six pilot models. The reasons behind the reduction, in no particular order, were the 76 gun was already inadequate for thick and/or steeply sloped frontal armor of later German tanks, and Army Ground Forces preferred to get the 90mm gun motor carriage M36 into service. The number of self-propelled tanks destroyer battalions had been approximately halved due to a policy change forced by the Army Ground Force, who wanted towed guns to be used, and hence far fewer self-propelled units were needed for the tank destroyers. There were little potential lend-lease activity. The Britain and Soviet Union had little interest. Two listed as T-70 were transferred to the United Kingdom and five to the Soviet Union. Production of the M18 Hellcats ran from July of 43 to October of 44 with 22,507 built. In March of 44, the T-70 was standardized by the Ordnance Department and the 76mm gun motor carriage M18, or as the 76 gun motor carriage M18. There were three production contracts for the Hellcat. RAD 563 covered the six pilot models. T-6641 was for the first 1,000 vehicles, and T-9167 was for the final 1,507 vehicles.
Have you guys seen, there's a photo of an M18 when they first came out. What the fuck was that?
Oh, I yawned.
Oh. It was when the M18 was first coming out, and a lot of soldiers were walking past them to go to the front, and they had one out there with a big sign saying, "Do not shoot at this."
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, it was like bringing the Hellcat out, it looked nothing like, you know, it didn't look like the M10, the Shermans, like, you know, all the American stuff had like bogeys, they had a certain sort of silhouette, and then you got this completely different vehicle, you know, different suspension. Suddenly the suspension looks a bit German-esque,
mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, they had these M18s everywhere with these signs, "Do not shoot." For, you know, identification, for learning, which would make, I really want to do that as well as a diorama, because that'd be pretty neat. I think I've seen that one done, but I want to do it myself.
Sounds really cool. All right, combat use, European theater part one in Italy. All right, five T-70 prototypes were sent to Italy in the spring of 44 for testing and assault combat during the breakout from the Anzio beachhead, with the 601st, which had two M18s, and the 894th Tank Destroyer Battalions, which had three. The 894th employed them in the battalion's reconnaissance company because of their high speed. In addition to the vehicle speed, battalion members were also impressed with the power of the 76 gun, but were less complimentary to the T-70's thin armor and small internal volume, which they felt affected crew confidence in battle, and made living inside the vehicle and handling main gun ammunition awkward. The 805 Tank Destroyer Battalion, originally a towed gun unit, re-equipped with the M18 during the summer of 1944, it was the only battalion in the Italian campaign to be fully equipped with M18s. And then down there on the bottom right, you got a nice picture of an M18, which is, I think that's that one Timmy made theirs off of.
I think it is. The 3-1 in the back seems familiar. Yeah.
Yep, sure is.
That It's one thing, the M18. They had a lot of markings on the M18s.
They did.
Which, for a tank modeler, is a good thing, because tanks never have enough decals. I can't believe I'm saying that, but they didn't have a lot of, you know, interesting things to put on.
Yep. All right. Combat use, European theater, part two, France. In January of 1944, General Omar Bradley, commander of the 1st U.S. Army, refused the new M18s when he was first offered them. Yes, for the Republic, Rex. his older tank destroyer battalions in England had been equipped with the M10 tank destroyer for some time, and he was more interested in the development of the M36 tank destroyer than he was in the M18. As a result, the three M18 battalions initially shipped to England, the 603, 704, and 705, were assigned to General George S. Patton's 3rd U.S. Army, which they probably were like thinking, fuck my life, on 19 September of 44, near Ericourt, France, across the Moselle from Nancy. The 704 Tank Destroyer Battalion was attached to the 4th Armored Division. Lieutenant Edwin Lepere led an M18 platoon of Company C to Rachecourt-la-Petite, roast me in the comments, I don't care, on the way to Mancourt, or Mon, whatever the fuck. They're in France. Yeah. He saw a German tank gun muzzle appearing out of the fog 30 feet away and deployed his platoon. In a 5-minute period, 5 German tanks of the 113th Panzer Brigade were knocked out for the loss of 1 M18. The platoon continued to fire and destroy 10 more German tanks while losing another 2 M18s. One of the platoon's M18s, commanded by Sergeant Henry R. Hartman, knocked out 6 of the German tanks, most of which were the much-feared Panther. By the time the Battle of Ericourt ended, 3 days later, the 704 Tank Destroyer Battalion had knocked out 39 German tanks for the loss of 4 M18s destroyed and 3 more damaged.
I'll tell you one thing, seeing suddenly a German gun muzzle 30 foot away, that's brown underwear time.
Yeah.
Like, at that point, it doesn't matter about the fucking AP rounds being a bit, you know, suspect on their penetration. 30 foot away, yeah, that will go through.
Oh, 100%.
That's fucking point blank.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like, you wonder, though, like, 30 foot away, how did any, like, surely the Germans knew they were coming? They must have heard them.
They probably... Because something, I don't know if you've read Spearhead, but that was common, was like, and when either side heard tank tracks, they were just quiet and waited to see who it was first before engaging. Mm. Combat use, European theater, part 3, Belgium. The M18 Hellcat was a key element during the Battle of the Bulge. On December 9th through the 20th, Team Desarbry, fuck it, a battalion-sized tank infantry task force of the 10th Armored Division was assigned to defend Noville, located north-northeast of both Foy and of Bastogne, just 4.36 miles away. With just 4 M18 tank destroyers of the 705th Tank Destroyer Battalion to assist, the paratroopers of the 1st Battalion of the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment attacked units of the 2nd Panzer Division, whose mission was to proceed by secondary roads to Monneville, just northwest of Bastogne, to seize a key highway and capture, among other objectives, fuel dumps, for the lack of which the overall German counteroffensive faltered and failed. Worried about the threat to their left flank in Bastogne, the Americans organized a major joint arms attack to seize Noville. Team Desarbry's high-speed highway journey to reach the blocking position is one of the few documented cases in which the top speed of the M18 Hellcat, 55 miles an hour, was actually used to get ahead of an enemy force, which is insane to think about, because the middle of the Battle of the Bulge, and you're going at 55 miles an hour in an open-top fucking TD. That's you're fucking drifting and shit. That's insane.
Yeah, you'd be shit scared of, like, staying on the road.
Again, like, why you need the assistant driver?
Like, fuck, we're going to die in combat, and it's not going to be because of the Germans. It's going to be because of our fucking driver. He's going to flip us. All right. Combat use, European theater, part 4, Belgium, part 2. The attack of the 1st Battalion of the M8 and the M18 Hellcat tank destroyers of the 705th Tank Destroyer Battalion near Neuville together destroyed at least 30 German tanks and inflicted 500 to 1,000 casualties on attacking forces. In what amounted to a spoiling attack, a Military Channel historian credited the M18 tank destroyer with 24 kills, including several Tiger tanks, and believed that, in part, their ability to shoot and scoot at high speed and then appear elsewhere on the battlefield confused and slowed the German attack, which finally stalled, leaving the Americans in control of the town overnight. After the Battle of the Bulge, since numbers of the M36 tank destroyers were slow in arriving to the European theater and towed tank destroyer battalions equipped with a 3-inch gun, M5 had uniformly performed very poorly in the battle when compared to the self-propelled units. It was decided to re-equip many of them with the surplus of M18s that were then in the theater, with the new M36s mostly re-equipped former M10 units. M18 strength in the European theater of operations varied from 1,046 in June of 1944 to a high of 540 in March of 1945. Losses totaled up to 260. All right, combat use, Pacific Theater. Fun stuff. M18 served in tank destroyer battalions and other units supporting U.S. Army infantry divisions in the latter stages of the Pacific War, notably in the Philippines and on Okinawa. Tank destroyer battalions equipped with the M18 that served in the Pacific theater of operations included the 637th, 670th, and 671st, although only the 637th saw combat, most notably participating in the Battle of Manila, where it earned a distinguished unit citation. During the Battle of Okinawa, General Andrew Bruce, who was by then the commander of the 77th Infantry Division, located 8 M18s to re-equip the anti-tank company of the 306th Infantry Regiment. M18s were not issued to the United States Marine Corps.
Okay, if I build one, it's definitely going to be a Pacific one.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, that picture there is... That's on Okinawa.
That one's got the 50 cal and a 30 cal somehow mounted on it as well.
Probably welded something.
Yeah.
Improvise, man. Neat.
So I wonder if Hellcats actually went up against any Japanese tanks at all.
I don't know. Did the Japs have tanks on Okinawa?
They had a whole bunch in the Philippines.
They did. And Manila is in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Jeez, where's Sione when you need her? She would know.
For real, fuck.
I mean, then again, like, a Hellcat against any Japanese tank is a bit overkill. I mean, considering the Sherman's short 75 would go through any of them, yep. A long barrel 76 is kind of like, that's just like, yeah, that is overkill.
I'm sure they did overkill. A lot of bunker penetration stuff, though.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that 50 cal sang quite a bit.
And the 30. Actually, honestly, having that 30 there for the Pacific Theater is probably a better idea, just because you know how the Japanese love to get up close and very personal.
Oh, yes. All right, so we got some prototypes here. We have the 90mm Super Hellcat, the 76mm GMC T-86, the M39 Prime Mover, and the 105 T-88 HMC.
So these little prototypes, well, the M39 wasn't really a prototype. I put it under prototype. It was used during the Korean War. What an M39 is basically you take the turret off an M18 and, well, yep, that's it. That's all you do. I used them for towing, you know, howitzers, you know, it was a prime mover. It was towing shit. And they also converted them into command vehicles as well. The 90mm, quote, super Hellcat, as some people call them. So what that was is trying to upgun the 76mm into the 90mm as used on the M36 Jackson. And all you basically do is you take the turret from the Hellcat, you take that off, and you literally just slide in the turret from the M36 Jackson. And then you've got a 90mm equipped Hellcat. I think they only made one prototype, and then it was deemed they didn't really need it anyway. However, if you want to make one, what you do is you buy the Tamiya Hellcat, you buy an M36, you take the turret and put that into the Hellcat, and then you take the Hellcat turret, and what you do with that is you put that into the hull of a T-55, and then you have that really cool Yugoslavian Hellcat T-55 hybrid. You guys remember seeing that?
Yes, that shit was awesome.
That shit looks so cool. So a little hit for everyone. The 105mm T-88 HMC, so that was trying to create a fire support Hellcat, basically just chucking out a 105, a bit like the Sherman, really. And then the 76 GMC T-86 and the T-87, I think it is, which is the 105mm, they just tried to make it amphibious, primarily for crossing the Rhine, I believe it was. But then, of course, they secured all the bridges, and they didn't really need anything like that anyway. So they were just prototyping to try and make it an amphibious fire support. But the T-88, I think there's only like two or three left in the world. There are only prototypes. Apparently, the 105 just didn't really work with it that well, and they didn't really need it. It's one of those things that's like, it's a good idea in theory, but it just wasn't necessary for the... material expenditure.
You got to think too, like if that's going to be a support vehicle, you probably want thicker armor.
Yeah, that as well, especially if you're going to get that close.
Yeah.
Now, didn't they use the Hellcat hull for the Duster as well? Am I thinking?
I have a feeling they did. Because it wouldn't be the Chaffee, because that's too small. I have a feeling it was. Hang on. It is time for a quick little bit of Googling. Because I believe they also made an artillery piece, a self-propelled gun, on the Hellcat as well. But I can't remember which one it was. Hang on. M42 Duster, isn't it?
Yeah.
42 Duster. Da-da-da-da-da. Nope, the Duster was development. Oh no, nope, it did use the Chaffee.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, M41.
Oh.
Yeah, the Walker. Hmm. Walker Bulldog.
I guess that makes more sense, as they had a surplus of them.
Yeah. Being American, they just had a surplus of everything.
Eagle screech. All right. Some models to build if you want to build the Hellcat. You've obviously got the well-renowned Tamiya M18 Hellcat. You've got the AFV Club Hellcat, which has a muzzle brake. You've got a bolt action M18 Hellcat, and then the one on the bottom right, I can't remember the box. Academy, thank you. Yep. Academy is M18. And
okay,
so, I've heard good things about the AFV Club, but it's a little out of proportion, I've heard.
Mm. So I would avoid the bolt action one at all costs, because that is artillery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's probably tabletop scale.
Yeah, it is as well, 56. The Tamiya one is the only one that has the mantle canvas, whatever you call them, canvas cover.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
However, the AFV Club and the Academy do have the muzzle brake, so it's kind of like pick your poison on that one. I mean, it does look better with the canvas cover, I gotta say. Does mean though that you can only have the gun pointing straight, and you can't have it like, you know, rotating or anything, like raising up and down, which is like the only downside.
Let me check something if you can build it without, if it gives you the option to build it without, because I'm actually curious.
I think you can, but also just looking at the AFE Club and the Academy one, the gun mantle looks different on both kits.
It does.
It really does.
Like the Academy one looks weird. It looks like it's missing the front plate. Like if you look, like if you look around the AFE Club one, right? You see where the mouse is. So you can see there's a plate over there, and then you look at this one and the Academy.
Oh
one,
yeah, looks like really it's missing. It.
That is weird.
No, the Tamiya, that's a newer kit, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's only what, 2 years old?
Yeah, it's one of their newer ones, and it's like 36 and like steps. It's a very detailed kit.
Yeah, I remember because everyone went nuts when they announced that.
Oh yeah. Which I just wish it came with an actual crew, because it only comes with that one figure, and it's like, really?
Oh really?
What's the interior like?
Very, very detailed. Extremely detailed.
What, like turret or like turret basket and driver?
Turret basket.
See, the EFE like Club, I think, has got a full interior, doesn't it?
Here, let me double check, because
as one failing of Tamiya is like if it's an open top, but it's like, yeah, they detail the turret interior enough, but there's still the rest of it that is just like plain plastic. Like, there's no detail.
So the way Tamiya did this one is, if you have both parts of the hull connected, you can. They have like the bottom of the tank, and they have like part of the engine. It looks like a little bit that's sticking out. I can't tell what it is. But they don't have any of the driver or A-driver detail. But the instructions for the turret itself start on page... or start on instructions 19 and do not end until... ...31.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's very detailed.
So I guess, Garrison, next question would be then, when the fuck are you going to build it?
I was actually debating on building the Hellcat or this M5 Stuart from AFE Club, and I went with the Stuart because it was a smaller kit. Literally the only reason I needed the Hellcat was because of the amount of fucking pieces, and I didn't feel like dragging out a build like that. So honestly, I have no idea, because I plan on working on the Ukraine diorama for a while, so... That's honestly a really good idea, or a really good question. I don't know.
Then again, that can be all same for every single one of us. Of when are you going to build this particular kit?
True.
And point. I specifically kept, like, I know I told you guys I purged my stash, and I'm selling most of it just because I want a smaller stash, but I kept the Hellcat because I really want to build it. I've got a few ideas. But it's one of the few that I kept because I really do want to build it, and it's a good kit, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Intermission, gents. Let's get to it.
All right. So, thank you, Garrison. That was a very, very, very good presentation.
It really was.
So, we are just going to have a quick intermission, go take a slash, get some more coffee. I know I need some more coffee. I am crashing already. And after the intermission, we are going to be back with the usual hobby news, works in progress. I've got some exciting news to tell. And, yeah, hang loose. We'll be back in a minute. And we are back with the hobby news. And this week, we got some very exciting announcements. And up first, we have Garrison creaming himself over.
A little bit. Das Werk, you are doing the good thing for me, yeah? Fuck, I want the Jaeger one.
Sorry, what? How do you pronounce the whole thing? Come on, the audience have got to know, especially the audio only audience, they got to know what you're talking about.
the 1 to 35th scale DOS work in corporation with amusing hobby. Rekten Yadpanza Jägav uns.
Of course, that. What are those? What is that based off?
That is an armored personnel carrier for the Bundeswehr.
Well, it's a tank destroyer, actually. Yes, so Das Werk are bringing out a Rekten. Fuck me. In German. Jesus Christ. I tried learning it.
You got this.
The Rekten Jagdpanzer Jaguar 1. I have a feeling the chassis is definitely based off some sort of vehicle, but I can't remember which one. And it is a tank destroyer with a anti-tank missile on it. I want to say, what missile system would it be used? Maybe the Milan? No, that's too modern, is it?
I don't think it was that.
No. Use some
SS.11 missile system with an HTO launcher and upgraded armor.
Wait, they use an SS-11?
Huh.
On the number 2.
On a Jaguar 2. Oh, I was going to say, because the SS-11, that's what they put on the AMX-1375. That's the one, you know, the model I've got of the French tank with the missile coming out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the SS-11. Anyway, it's a bloody cool-looking vehicle. Yeah, fuck, even I want one, man. Like, they are super cool. And what else is on this slide?
Real quick.
Yep.
There's a very similar vehicle that's an armored personnel carrier variant of this.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I got. I still want this bad, but
Yeah, anyway. So what else is on your slide? This is your slide, by the way. If you put it up, you're talking about it.
This is the ICM model kit number 35435, Humvee M109-7A2. 100% new molds in 35th scale. It's a light skin Humvee for admin purposes. And
you can guarantee what that's mainly going to be built into. It's going to be digi camo, fucking Ukraine. That's what they're going to turn it into. And probably. I approve. Okay, up next, two from Armor Hobby. First up, in 72nd scale, brand new mold, brand new tooling, molds, everything. They're releasing a P-51D Mustang. Of course, this will be on par with the B and C Mustangs that they released a couple years ago. Contains decal masks, definitely a bit of photo etch. Looking at the box art, we're going to be having decals for Old Crow, which is quite a famous Mustang because I keep seeing it everywhere, apparently. So that's new in 72nd scale. And, of course, in 48 scale, they are bringing out a brand new tool of a P-39Q Air Cobra, which I am also all about.
Oh, I want that. Oh, that's Cactus Air Force, too.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Oh.
Brand new Air Cobra in 48 scale, which I desperately need an Air Cobra because those things are fucking awesome.
Have you ever built Arma Hobby?
No, I really want to get my hands on one. I haven't either. But yeah.
That's going to be so much better than the Edward kit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. One thing I also found a bit funny, you look at the P-51 box, it's officially licensed by Boeing. You know that all, like, for a while, Boeing wouldn't allow model makers to make any like models of Boeing aircraft unless they got a payout for it.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Fucking Boeing, man. They're fucking stingy bastards.
Sounds about right.
Okay, up next for everyone who's into waterline ships, Aoshima releasing a whole bunch of destroyers and battleships and carriers and cruisers, shit like that, with brand new parts into them. They're sort of updating them because I think they're a bit of an old series, so they're being.
They look like Hasegawa box arts.
They also look like the Tamiya ones as well. They all look the same. Hasegawa, Aoshima, Tamiya, their waterline series, especially with, like, you know, the you know, along the top there, they all look the exact same. Yeah, I thought this was Tamiya for a second, and then it was like, oh no, it's Aoshima. Anyway, they are bringing out the Japanese battleship Nagato, the Japanese aircraft carrier Hiryu. Whatever.
Hiryu.
I think that was one of the ones that was sunk at Midway. The heavy cruiser Takao, the destroyer Suzutsuki, and the destroyer the Yukikaze. Yeah, good enough. And honestly, I would love to have any one of these because I don't have anything Japanese in the way of ships yet. And, you know, they made a lot of really cool ones. I really, really, really want a Kitakaze. Kitakami? Kitakaze. Something like that. It was a... that was the one that we were talking about before, Clint. Is it cruiser?
Oh, yeah. It was a torpedo cruiser. It had, what was it, 10 quad mounts on each side?
Yeah. Five quad mounts per side, so you got 20 torpedoes coming out of each side, which is fucking nuts.
Yeah.
But I'll take any of these, like the Taikao, the heavy cruiser. You see, that one's got a really cool turret configuration. You got three in the front, two in the back, sort of thing. The Nagato, I believe, is an older battleship.
Yeah.
Just by looking at the secondary guns in that sort of classic fortress style, which is really cool. But I would take any of these, to be honest.
Oh, that battleship, it's got the old pagoda-style bridge.
Yeah. Oh, I love those.
Beautiful.
Dude, at the I got to get myself a Dreadnought-style destroyer or something of that ilk, like World War One style, because there was one at the model show yesterday, and... oh. That thing would look beautiful. Anyway, Garrison.
All right, we got Zvezda, 1-72nd scale T-62. The renderings are really nice of this kit. Honestly, it makes me want to build a 72nd scale armor because T-62 is such a cool tank. And then top right, we got Hobby Boss with their LAV 300 90mm. Cockerel gun that is screaming for HIDF, like just absolutely screaming for it.
Oh, dude, it looks freaking awesome.
Oh yeah, 100%. Throw some fucking pallets, tires, and trash on the side of it, like they did in the Philippines.
Yeah,
make it HIDF. Ooh,
20
yeah.
layers of cardboard.
Yep, it'll stop something, boys. Maybe our hearts, but it'll stop something.
How good is
put enough
hobby...
trash on it?
Yeah, how good is Hobby Boss armor kits? Because I'm like, I keep seeing like occasionally good things, a lot of bad things about Hobby Boss. I'm like, so like, for most
it depends
of my is
Hobby
like...
Boss made it or not.
Yeah,
the only armor I've done from Hobby Boss was their AAV, and I will never do another Hobby Boss kit. I say that, and I would be willing to do this one if the reviews are good, but that AV was one of the worst kits I've built. One of. Not the worst, but one of the worst kits I've built.
Yeah, like I keep seeing it's either really good or it's like the most plain, simple, like not detail orientated or it's you know.
Yeah.
Usually basic is basic. Yeah. Makes a general shape, we'll say.
The Hobby Boss 222 I built. It was a really good kit, and then come to find out that it was actually a TriMaster kit.
Are they usually good, TriMaster?
Oh, TriMaster is amazing. They was way beyond their time.
Oh, nice. Okay, up next from Magic Factory, they are releasing a SDKFZ 234-2 Puma in 72nd scale. So I don't know how good they are. Magic Factory are a pretty cool company. They're releasing a lot of cool stuff. So, just reading at the bottom here, vehicle parts are a product from Fingertip Model Studio. Don't know if that means anything to anyone.
I never heard of them.
Yeah, me neither. However, brand new Puma.
Puma, Puma.
From Special Hobby and 72nd Scale, they're releasing a CH-37A Mojave, U.S. Army. This is a heavy lift helicopter used in Vietnam, wasn't it? Yes.
I think, was it used in Korea also or no?
I don't think so. No, it looks very Vietnam, not Korea. But yeah. Either way, it's a weird looking helicopter, but I really like it for some reason.
It's like, it's just so ugly, it's like attractive.
Well, the weird thing is, if you look at the back half looks sort of Black Hawk or, you know, something like that, and then the front half is a mistake.
You're right.
I also love to find out what these pods are on the sides where the landing gear is. Like, is that just for landing gear, but it's got like an exhaust coming out? I don't know what's going on here. Yeah,
surely the engine wasn't in pods.
Well, I mean, the engine must be up here, but then I am confused right now as what's going on here, so I might need to actually do a bit of research in this one. I do like the decal, though. It looks like it's got the decal's got an eye on it, or what might be an eye. I don't know. Either way, I kind of just want one because it's weird.
It is right. Odd.
It's like an egg extended with propellers.
It's like ugly. It's so ugly that it's cool.
Yeah.
It's like you asked a 5-year-old to draw a helicopter.
Oh, good job, buddy. Hey, Thomason, make this a thing.
It's like, hey, this could work.
Brilliant.
And lastly, from Border, they are releasing an STKFZ 251-22 with 7.5 centimeter Pack 40 Packwagen. This is just brand new. This is just new parts coming off their 251. What's the standard one that's just got a machine gun on it?
2511.
Yeah, that one. So, yeah, it is Border, so hit or miss if it's good or not. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm not excited about it.
Just like the kit itself, the box art looks like an old photograph.
I think they just scanned it wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's say with type D something or other. So, whatever. I mean, Clint.
The tracks, yeah. Probably.
You will have to admit, though, even if it's Border, if you saw it in a store, you would get it?
No, I'd get the Dragon one. I'd at least know the Dragon one is how it goes together, and it's going to be very detailed.
Yeah. And that is all for the hobby news this week. Now we're going to move on to what we've been working on, and first up is
me. Alright, I've got, I think, 4 slides. I'll try to rush through these. So I've started working on my Ukraine war diorama. It's a 3.5 by 2 foot base. It's able to hold 2 inches worth of foam depth-wise, so there's plenty of room for trenches and blast craters and terrain work. Here is kind of the rough layout. I've got all the figures built. It's going to be Ukrainians attacking a Russian fortified tree line with trenches and bunkers in early 2024, sometime in the late winter, early spring era. So very, very muddy. Lots of fun configuring all the figures and getting the trench layout going. Very excited to get the Proxon foam hand cutter and get to work on those. Then here's some more pictures showcasing. So top left is like some Russians who are running, who are supposed to be breaking contact in their own trench that are going to be, they're being engaged. Top right, some guys opening up a bunker with a cloth over it. They're going to be engaging into it. Bottom left is some dudes taking back a wounded guy. Center, they're prepping a frag, getting ready to throw it. And then bottom right is a Russian heavy machine gun bunker that's aiming down a road. Then here's some painting stuff. A little rough on the paint job, but this is supposed to be Flora, one of the Russian camos that they use for conscripts. Like I said, kind of a rough paint job, but these guys are going to be covered in like washes, mud, and inside of a trench, so it's really not going to matter how rough the paint job is.
I have to say, you did a really good job on that helmet.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Thank you, yeah.
Really nice.
Especially yeah, the cover on the goggles? Dude. Mm.
Yeah, I'm pretty, I won't lie, I am pretty proud of that helmet. And that was one, the base color is U.S. olive green, I think it is. And it was, I'm getting really good at glazing the models. Like just one, I'll prime it white and I'll utilize one layer of glazing method, and it, after it dries, it turns into that. It sits in the recesses, gives it the shadows that I want, and you know, really, you know, gives me products like that, which is I absolutely love.
That came out like really nice.
Oh yeah.
Thank you. And the next top left got the base for the Stuart. Bottom left and center is a Stuart, and then just some more figures, which I've, everybody with like a beige color hat, they have already painted on their secondary color that are going to be multicam. So
that Stuart's looking really nice, especially what aftermarket is the sandbags?
Fucking alley. I forgot.
I think
the
they look like the Legend set.
Legend, thank you. Yeah, Legend. I think it is Legend.
For some reason, I had Verlinden stuck in my head, but...
No, definitely not Verlinden. It's too good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not goofy enough.
Yep.
I will say the back stowage with the rope is looking really nice as well.
Thank you. Yeah, what really sucks is I CA glued it down to its points, and somewhere at some point in time, one of them came loose. You can kind of see it on the center picture.
It's got a little slack.
Dude, yeah, I worked so hard to get that, like, tensioned right. Because the rope itself is, like, it's like rubber band rope. So I tried not to pull on it too much when trying to make it, like, tight. But I think with over time, it just kind of...
gave way.
Kind of, yeah, which really sucks. But, you know, it is what it is.
What you could try is to light a match and immediately extinguish it and then hold it up to it and see if that tightens it.
That's a good idea. Now, the only problem is I've got all sorts of, like, flammables on it.
yeah.
Like, I've already got the oil washes with the, God damn it, what's that shit called? Mineral spirits on there.
Because so, you say it's elastic, like the Easy Line or Ushi Line.
Yeah, it's I got it from Michaels. It's a string that's, it looks like rope in 35th scale, but it's like elastic, and you can like pull on it and shit, and it extends quite well.
Then yeah, if it's like that, definitely try to, you know, be careful. Try to take a match and put up to it, see if I tighten it any.
Yeah, because anything like the flammable wouldn't go up.
Yeah.
Most of that would have been evaporated off by now.
True, true. That's very true.
I think you'll be alright.
Well, I'll have to give that a shot.
And I got more work done on Chopper.
Chopper!
Got his dome put together last night and stuck it on top of his body just to see what he was going to look like. Next up, before I start on the legs, I'm going to start seam filling. You can see a couple of the seams on his dome that are unavoidable at the moment.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It just fits with the aesthetic of badly put together.
Yeah.
Chopper is looking good. Okay.
Fucking
don't talk too much shit on him or he'll kill you.
No, that's true.
The damn Star Wars the murder bot.
Bro, what the fuck kills you?
Okay, so this is mine. This is all I've been working on is the Mariner, and my god, nothing in the wings fit at all. Like, the other night, I spent most of the night trying to put it together. There is liquid cement and CA glue holding those wings together, and I expect them to, like, pop off and go flying in multiple directions. at any point.
Rest in peace.
even there, you can see, this area, the top, the wings are just supposed to slide down. Once fully put together, it's supposed to slide down onto the fuselage in a groove, and it'll be fine. Does it do that? No. If you put the front down, the top side, the back side pops up. It's just, I think it's warped or something. I don't know what's going on with it, but it will not sit down flat against the fuselage. So I'm going to have to get some heat, hair dryer or something, and then just try and soften the plastic just to get it to form a little bit better. And it's ultimately changed all my painting plans because I was trying to paint the wings separately because it's got, because of the way that the paintwork is.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking if I could keep the wings off, I can paint that separately, paint the fuselage separately, and then it'll just pop together along two panel lines, and it'll just create a panel line on either side. Except it's fitting so badly that it's going to be, I think I'm going to have to just glue it down as it is now and just figure out how to paint it later sort of thing.
Bust out the clamps.
But I've got all the interior of everything painted, so the all the interior work's done except for the wheel wells, but I'll do them later. But otherwise, this kit is started off well, and it is turning to absolute shite. Then again, it is Academy. What do you expect?
Most unfortunate.
And this is what I got up to yesterday, so I went down to the Waikato Scale Model Club's annual event and took a couple of models down with me. I took the Whippet down, which sadly, it managed the entire trip, an hour and a half, to get down there. And it was the last thing I was putting on a table. And just as I put it down, one of the machine gun barrels pinged off. Never to be seen again. Literally, the minute I put it down on the competition table and it snapped off, I was like, oh, you motherfucker.
Oh, shit.
So, one of the Hotchkiss barrels is the same length as the gas piston thingy, whatever they're called. You know, in a machine gun where they got the piston thing, rod, whatever. You know what I'm talking about, eh?
No, we want you to explain it more.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're talking about, Callum.
Oh, go fuck yourself. So that fucking barrel broke, which is, right when the judges were coming around. Fucking great. I had no chance at all on that one. Brought along the Camel and the Bolton Defiant, just because, they look cool. And also my German MG42 machine gunner in 16th scale on his little base there. And the figure actually ended up coming first. I got first place for it out of, I think, 10.
Hell yeah.
I think there were 10 figures there, and I got a first for it. So,
which congratulations.
Unexpected. Thank you, fellas. I mean, first time entering anything, and I got that. The trophy is pretty cool.
Hell yeah,
it is. The trophies were made from, they called them D20 engine, but I've been trying to search it up and I can't find any sort of jet engine that's called a D20. I know
Clint, it looks like a P blade. This is what I make out of work is compression blades and vanes for jet aircraft engines, and
that's what it is.
That looks like a P blade that goes in an F-16.
Well, it's definitely not an F-16 because I don't know where in New Zealand we'll get F-16 engine parts. They called it a D-20 engine, but I can't find any jet engine that's called a D-20. But either way, it's a really cool trophy, and I was pretty pleased to get that one. And at the same time, I also bought a Messerschmitt Bf 109E3 in 32nd scale off a friend because he was selling it for dirt. I got a real good deal on it, and he needed the money. So,
Hell yeah.
I mean, I know I disappointed Don with that one. Well, two disappointments, really. Winning something with a German subject and buying a German subject. But
And he was just upset because it wasn't a snug.
Yeah. I mean, it is an E3. I wanted an E3 BF-109 for a long time because I prefer the early 109s to the late ones. So I'm pretty happy to get that one.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, but overall, so I went there, met up with a whole bunch of guys I've met at the Auckland Modeling Club a couple weeks ago. So I'm going to be joining the Auckland IPMS Club because they're a bunch of cool guys.
Very nice.
Met up with Andrew Measleaf. He was a guest on the Modeling Insanity podcast, and he's active service at the moment for the New Zealand Army, and he's on our server, and you guys have chatted to him. He's a really, really cool guy. A lot of cool stories, I've got to say. So it was really good to meet up with him and just getting to know the New Zealand modeling community. So that was quite good. It was really fun.
Hell yeah.
That's good.
You know, I kind of figured I should probably become a bit more, you know, I'm very sociable online. I should probably become a bit more sociable within, you know, real life as well.
Yeah, that's well, overrated.
There you go.
Yeah. But, yeah, yesterday, because that's like the first proper model show I've been to. Well, no, I say that last year I went to the Nationals in Auckland, but that, I didn't know anyone. I went with my dad and he was like, you know, a model show, you want to spend a bit of time looking, whereas my dad, you go through the tables sort of once looking. It was like, right, all done. It's like, we've only been here an hour.
But, you know, please. Dad, we're looking at 5 hours minimum.
Oh, I got to the model show yesterday at about 10 a.m. and didn't leave till like 4:30.
Oh, yeah.
So, and apparently that was the biggest turnout they've had in a while. I think it was like 50 people maybe there, 50 to 60. And at least 200 models, I'd say. And they were some quality models, you know. Like, you guys saw that photo of the Bismarck?
Oh, yeah. That was 1700, wasn't it?
1700. That guy did so many details on it. Like the lifeboats had photo etch rails on them. Like on the fucking lifeboats. Like you look through it and everything, you could just see all these different details, all hand picked out and all of that. It was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. And then there was the USS Wasp that had full interior of the hangar and the cavity at the bottom where all the Amtraks and, you know, where you unload. Garrison, you'd probably know what that's called.
Yep. Lower deck?
Yeah, whatever. It's just that.
Waiting deck, I think is what it's called.
That's the one that, like, it lowers down so it floods with water, eh?
Yeah, I think that's called the waiting deck.
Okay.
Yep.
I was Hilo Company, so I never got to actually do that, so.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, I worked out in a well deck! That's what the well deck! We did a lot of workouts in the well deck, but I never got to do amphibious shit.
That sucks. That sounds like the fun part.
So I'm guessing that was the second Wasp, but not the first Wasp.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was really disappointed it wasn't, it was the USS America was your one, Garrison?
Yeah, LHA-6 USS America.
Yeah, I was a bit gutted it wasn't that one, but oh well. Can't get them all, but no, yeah, seriously, some of the models there that they had were just really good quality. A large contingent of car and motorcycle models as well. But that's enough from me, Garrison. You're back up.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the Micro Machines Podcast presents group builds. This one is the continuing Pacific Theater group build. Ends September 1st, so you've got some more time if you want to enter it. We have one amazing prize for the winner, but there's also a recreational entry. So if you want to find out more about that and the other group builds, join our Discord and find out through the channels. Same thing as the last group build, except no prizes. This is just for fun. This is our science fiction group build, ending same time frame. Like I said in the last one, join the Discord, see what other people are building, show off what you're building, and have some fun. And then, of course, we have a continuing Horizon Island Defense Force group build on our Discord server. This is for the magnificent brave men and women of the HIDF who have fought gallantly to defend Tanoa throughout the years. So that's dedicated to them and their service and their continuing service for their country.
And once you have finished listening to us, we encourage you to go listen to some of the other model podcasts out there. Just Making Conversation, Modeling Insanity Podcast, Plastic Posse, Scale Model Podcast, all of those guys. So go and check them all out. And hell, lastly, yeah. Garrison, you used the wrong slide for this because you're missing someone.
Fuck, who am I missing?
The name I can't pronounce.
Well, that's my bad, good sir. Fuck, hang on.
Completely professional here.
Oh, I know, totally right? Professional. I mean, hang on. I'm just going to have to go to...
For the Republic. Yeah, I pulled from a landing vehicle track.
Oh, that was slides. Dumb, wasn't it?
A little bit.
I'll just go to this one. Doesn't really matter. Nope, we need that one.
Brielli... Yeah. Sorry, man. I'm from America. I can't English.
Okay, so as usual, at the end of the episode, we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Paul Gallagher, Lord Floki, Robert Judson, Robert Brisbane, Brielli Mastroni. You're going to have to forgive us, mate, because, you know, we barely fucking speak English properly, let alone a different language. I mean, you've heard us trying to do German, French, Japanese. It is a clusterfuck. So you have to forgive us for that.
Next time we do a German episode, we need to do it a little bit earlier and get Lacey on here so she can, you know, properly pronounce all the German words for us.
Sounds like a good idea. Plus, we need to get Sione on here just to talk about Japanese things.
We do. We
definitely need to do that.
Yeah. But do we have any more comments from you two before we close out?
If you're still listening, thank you. We love you guys.
All right. So, if you have made it this far, you have been watching and listening to the Micro Machines podcast. We would like to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for listening in, and we will catch you guys on the next episode. See you later.
Deuces. See ya.